Welcome back to Building the Bakken Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'll be your host today. In our next segment, Research and Development, we talk with Charlie Gorecki, Matt Burton-Kelly, and John Harju of the Energy and Environmental Research Center in Grand Forks, North Dakota.
I mean, most hydrocarbon production, most big oil fields were actually discovered by surface seeps.
Mm-hmm. So, Jed Clampett oil, they call
it? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we didn't have all of the wisdom and accumulated knowledge of modern geology in the early days of oil and gas. And so you'd find these surface seeps, and then eventually people figured out that, you know, as they dried up, you know, if you started digging down, you know, along those outcrops where that oil was, you often found more oil. And then, of course, as you started to get a better understanding of the geology and the very formations that were seeping that oil, you might take them down to 8 or 10,000 feet. And frankly, in the Williston Basin here, you get up into Manitoba, you know, that's where most of the early oil was discovered prior to discovery in North Dakota from surface seeps. And you didn't actually have discovery of producible oil in North Dakota until the 1950s, as people were surmising that it must have come from here somewhere to have, you know, squirted out here on the edges.
That was back in the vertical drill days.
Back in the vertical days. And so, you know, essentially, you know, a lot has been learned over that period of time. And so this is really more, you were kind of talking to old technology, new technology, and so from an exploration standpoint, this is very much old school, you know, with modern day electronics and all of this accumulated wisdom that we have. But what we're looking for is places with high likelihood of hydrocarbon accumulation in the subsurface. But now we're looking at things that aren't necessarily structural traps. So we knew in the past you had to find a fault zone or an anticline or some reason for that oil to accumulate somewhere. We know all of that now. Now we're looking for these, and this isn't the right word for it, but think of them almost as secondary traps, where they're not your primary exploration targets, but rather what they are places where there's high likelihood that hydrocarbons accumulated at least at some point in the past. Now, using today's technology that we've developed for enhanced recovery, maybe you can go into these zones that were never really productive in a primary sense and actually make them productive.
Do we know the depths at this point as far as, is it as much as the seepage all the way down to this 17 million miles underground? Or?
Well, we have some prime targets that we're looking at. The prime targets would be targets where there are currently production in those formations, like the Madison, like the Red River Formation. Those are two prime ones because there are a lot of oil fields. Oil is definitely accumulating into fields there, and they were likely, and we know that things have happened to those formations since the oil was generated. So it's very likely that oil had accumulated in other spots in those and was moved. Or, like as John was alluding to, there was kind of a migration pathway. Those are some of the prime ones that we're looking at. You want to add to some of the other ones?
There was, we're also looking at things like the spearfish, which is, oil wasn't generated in the spearfish, it was moved into the spearfish from another zone. So looking at where the oil was generated, and we know if oil ended up in the spearfish, it had to get from A to B. So we're looking in between those and maybe in new areas of the spearfish.
Okay.
We are using Bakken data. We're using a lot of Bakken data to put into the model to calibrate the temperature curves and the depths at certain times, and the maturity. So we're making sure that the Bakken comes out right, because there's so much data available. Right. But it's not really a specific target for new production for this project.
Would these findings call for a vertical or horizontal drill, or do we not know? Or?
We wouldn't maybe speculate that at the moment, but likely these would be producible by vertical wells in a conventional type pattern. In West Texas, they do a lot of it in a conventional pattern, so it'll be generally 40-acre spacing, vertical wells. They do five-spot patterns, so they have injector-producer, with the injectors being for CO2, mm-hmm. producers obviously just producing. So, and that would be verticals, but it depends on the formation, and it depends on the permeability. The reason that horizontals are so prolific in the Bakken is it has incredibly low permeability, and there's a lot of we have to fracture the wells to help stimulate that flow of fluids. Mm-hmm. So if it was, depending on the permeability of the rock, a vertical well and a pattern might work well. Alternatively, maybe horizontals would be good. There's a cost benefit you have to do. A horizontal well costs a lot more than it does to do a vertical well.
To listen to the full-length interview with Charlie Gorecki, Matt Burton-Kelly, and John Harju, or to listen to other research and development features, visit buildingthebakken.com. That's buildingthebakken.com. My name is Jason Spies, and this is Building the Bakken Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network.
United Frac, a reputation for the best quality new and used frac tanks. United Frac prides themselves in selling only the highest quality oil field equipment. United Frac has the largest frac tank inventory in North America. This includes new and pre-owned tanks. Contact a salesman today. Discover why United Frac sells more tanks in a week than competitors do in a year. Call toll-free 866-513-0565 or go to unitedfrac.com. That's United Frac.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
Hey folks, I'm multimedia journalist Jason Spies, and the host of Building the Bakken Radio and Coffee and Capitalism. Traveling across the Rocky Mountain region and the upper Midwest has introduced me to many new people, landed me in exciting places, and created lifelong connections. And there's one place I want to tell you about today, and that's the Lodge at Deadwood. It is without a doubt my favorite place to stay in the Black Hills. In fact, not only is it my favorite, it's pretty much everybody else's. They're a three-time recipient of the best hotel, best casino, and best overall restaurant in the Black Hills. So if you're planning a conference, maybe a weekend getaway, a wedding, whatever it might be, I truly invite you to check out the Lodge at Deadwood and find out why they're consistently voted the best hotel, the best casino, and the best restaurant. Now listen, if I didn't believe that the Lodge at Deadwood was the best place to stay in the Black Hills, I wouldn't be doing this testimonial across our media network, which spans 5 states and 30 plus radio stations. And I feel very confident when I say the Lodge at Deadwood will exceed all your expectations. Check them out online today at deadwoodlodge.com. That's deadwoodlodge.com.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
Dome Technology, Dan South, Vice President of Sales. We operate out of Idaho Falls, Idaho. We focus on building concrete structures, primarily dome structures. It's a monolithic type construction. It's a little bit unique in that our domes are built on air inflated structures. We'll have like a concrete ring foundation, similar to most foundations, and then we attach an air form to it. We inflate it with air, and then go on the inside of it, and we insulate it with polyurethane foam, and then we apply engineered reinforcing rebar and like shotcrete to the underside of it. And so at the end of the day, you've got a firm, hardened, very durable storage facility.
That is quite an engineering feat, isn't it, in your industry, or is it pretty common now, I guess?
No, it's pretty unique. You know, we're a design-build firm, so we do all our own engineering design and actual execution. Our engineers specialize in thin-shell concrete design. It's very unique. We use a lot of finite element analysis in the designs, and they're great buildings.
Energy industry, do you supply the energy industry with these?
Yeah, you know, we've done a number of storage facilities in the energy industry in the past, mostly for coal storage. We've done a little bit in some refineries for pet coke storage. They make any type of product that's stored in bulk, coal, limestone, bulk, pet coke, as I mentioned. Any bulk type storage, we do really well at.
Is there any, you know, international barriers that you guys had to go through, or is it pretty smooth sailing?
You know, each project has its own unique challenge. Over here, we've got our own building codes domestically in the United States. When you go over to Europe, they've got the Euro code that you need to adhere to. Mm-hmm. There's a few challenges that way. There's always some challenges logistically moving in, getting things through customs and then just overall, you know, some of the safety aspects of a construction project. We've got OSHA over here that, you know, everyone's accustomed to, but you go to a foreign country and they have their own governing rule of law as far as health and safety. So they've got their own challenges, but the bottom line is we're building construction, we're builders, that's what we do. Once you figure out the nuances and the idiosyncrasies for each country, you can usually work through those.